You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yesterday, the Office of the Children's Commissioner and the School's Trustees Association announced that the report on a survey of children reflected a theme of racism in schools. I talked to the Children's Commissioner, Andrew Beecroft, about the survey's themes and what it means for the future development of education, as well as quickly talking about the government's new Child Poverty Reduction Bill and the recent announcement of the Royal Commission's inquiry into abuse in state care. I started off by asking Andrew to explain what the report on school children has shown.
Well, actually, to put it in context, it was actually a report to ascertain and hear from children involved in education as to what their experience was and what their insights were. So it was a much wider report than just that. It was a real exercise to hear from children and to emphasise just how important it is to hear children's voices. So clear messages we got: about 60 to 70% of kids said they thought school was okay, 25% thought it was amazing, really enjoyed it. Under 10% said they just didn't like it at all. Three clear messages were the importance of great teachers and teachers that can inspire and open doors and change lives, the need for supportive families, secondly, and thirdly, the need for good, involved friends. So they were key messages. And we also asked open-ended questions about what was the experience the children had of school. And we got six key insights. Now, one of those, but only one of them, was that people at school are racist towards me. Now, we never asked the question. It wasn't a report on racism. It wasn't even an inquiry into racism. But having asked kids' insights and having heard them, a clear and consistent theme, particularly for Māori and Pacifica children in alternative education or on the margins of mainstream, was that they experienced stereotyping, discrimination, and racism. Their words were something like, treat everyone as equals, don't jump to conclusions because of race. A Pacifica student: what also puts me off are the teachers telling me to give up, saying I'm not going to pass level 3 without even checking my credits. I sense stereotypes in my teachers' eyes and gestures. How they act towards me makes me feel like leaving. So it surprised us, I've got to say, that that was one of the consistent things that came through. Unasked for, but nevertheless clearly part of children's experiences.
Could you possibly explain why it was surprising for that to come out of a report such as this?
I would have thought New Zealand in 2017 and 18 that we were past those sort of attitudes. And I think most educators and teachers would be horrified to know that that was the lived experience of some children. It certainly wouldn't be something they'd be happy with. I don't think any of us would be. But we can't ignore what children have told us, and they've told us how important it is for them to develop a sense of belonging and not to feel undervalued or underrated because of their culture, and indeed for their culture to be understood and in their place in their culture to be valued. Now, that's, I think, a real challenge, but yeah, it was surprising that New Zealand in 2018 would still have those attitudes, or at least children would point to them as part of their experience.
Yes, what I also think is interesting is that it was not just other students making comments like that, but what was reported was that teachers were also making those discriminatory comments. Why do you think this has happened? Isn't that something that is addressed in the education of teachers and by schools generally?
Yeah, all of that. That's why I think it's a wake-up call. I mean, the underlying message in all of this work was our commitment to hear from children, to hear from their voices, to listen to them, to factor it into decision-making. And we do that so badly in New Zealand. So I think the message from this exercise, in the light of the national education learning priorities that are going to be put in place, that we've got to hear from children more. We've got to be consistent about hearing from children. And they have, their voices have great value. Their insights are really useful in forming policy. And when it comes to the national education learning priorities, one of the issues has got to be, how well are we doing with children of other cultures? What are some underlying attitudes that we may not even know exist? It may all be done subconsciously, unconsciously. But the point is, for kids at the coalface, for some of them at least, it is their experience.
Obviously, such a discovery that children's voices are so important to be listened to, particularly when it comes to school and that it hasn't been done before. What else do you think will be done or can be done to combat this issue that was discovered?
I mean, it's a whole of community approach, isn't it? I mean, schools don't exist in isolation, but particularly I think it's probably a matter for teacher training, boards of trustees to think about and reflect on. I mean, it's all too easy to have lower expectations for those students who come from groups that don't perform so well. So, I mean, one student said, we feel like we are failing when we are constantly reminded that we are not doing well. The principal used to bring out all these graphs to show us how we are failing, and it would just piss us off. And it's a student in alternative education. So, I mean, perhaps we, you know, for all of us, it's about setting higher expectations. We want all our children to thrive and to prosper and to flourish and to reach the same mark. So, I mean, it's not an easy issue, but it's good that children have brought it out into the open. It's uncomfortable, but it can't be avoided. There were 6 key insights that the Children's Voices Project discovered. The fact that people are racist towards them at school, their words, was just one of them. They also said how important it was that children be understood in their whole world. They said also that relationships mean everything to me. They also said, teach me the way I learn best, find out the way I learn best, but one size doesn't fit all. And they said, I need to be comfortable before I can learn. And they also said, it is my life, it's my education, let me have a say. So there were a variety of very, I think, significant insights, of which the experience of racism was just one. So we've sent this material to the Ministry of Education, I hope it can pave the way towards a climate and a commitment to consistently hear from children in schools. Their voices are too important and their place in the system is too important to be ignored.
Absolutely. I think it's amazing that it's never even been considered before.
Yeah, you're right. One child said, I am a library, quiet but filled with knowledge. It's dumb that I'm not asked. I think there's been something of the policy climate in New Zealand, unlike a country, for instance, Sweden. But in New Zealand, the approach has not been to consistently hear from children or look at new legislation through the lens of a child or to have child impact statements. I mean, these are all issues that we sadly lag behind other world-leading countries in, and that's got to change.
Just moving on to the Child Poverty Reduction Bill, could you possibly just explain briefly what the bill will mean for New Zealand?
Well, what it will do is provide a framework for consistent and sustained action to put a real dent and a significant reduction in child poverty. In brief, the legislation sets out a suite of measures, primary measures, 4 of them, supplementary measures, 6 of them, in respect of which governments will be required to set 3-year and 10-year targets. And progress will be measured each year by the chief statistician and published annually. So I think it's a terrific step forward. It's really a watershed moment. The real issue, of course, is going to be the nature of the targets. And last night they were set out and they're aiming to at least halve all the relevant current numbers by 2028, 29. And that's a great step forward. This was only a problem that started 30 years ago. It hasn't changed much over 30 years. Certainly wasn't my experience growing up as a child, nor that of my parents. So that which took a short time to create, we can undo pretty quickly. And I think it's a very exciting time. It's a good step forward. Now we've got to sit back and look at progress. And I'm optimistic that we can make a real improvement.
It was said that the targets aren't going to be necessarily set within the legislation. Is that correct?
Correct.
That they can be changed.
Yeah, there's an obligation in the legislation for the government of the day, whoever that might be, to set the targets. And yes, there's the ability to change them. What there is, however, is public accountability. So they can be debated and known about. And last night, the Prime Minister announced those targets for the next 10 years. And that, as I say, is to at least halve, and in some of the measurements, much more than halve current numbers. The experience in England, for instance, in Britain, as I understand it, was when the targets were included in the legislation and weren't met, in the end, the response was to scrap the legislation. So I can understand there needs to be some flexibility. Scrapping the legislation is entirely counterproductive.
So clearly you think that this is a big step forward for New Zealand, that this is going to combat child poverty and reduce it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's front and centre addressing that. It's what a previous Children's Commissioner and his expert advisor group recommended, just about word for word. It's what NGOs and community groups have been advocating for, groups like Child Poverty Action Group. They've had an absolute unswerving focus on the issue. So it's a genuinely, I think, watershed moment.
And just very quickly and finally and briefly, could you possibly say a little bit about the inquiry into abuse in state care?
Yeah, I mean, there were significant calls for an inquiry, particularly from the survivors of abuse. And I think the fact of an inquiry is a significant step forward. I welcome it. I'm sure the wider community will welcome it. I hope it will provide a real opportunity for those who've experienced sexual abuse to be heard. There'll be lessons to be learned. We need, in setting our policy for the future in terms of good monitoring and good complaint services, to learn from the lessons of the past. We can always improve, and sadly, issues of abuse and neglect will always continue to be potential problems, particularly for those in state care, and we have to do everything in our power to eliminate those risks. So I look forward to the Royal Commission and what it will recommend. There'll be much to learn. And in fact, there's a good blueprint in Australia. There, the six-year Royal Commission came out with a vast number of very helpful resources. So we've got a significant starting point there that will provide real assistance as the terms of reference are finalised.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.